Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here. Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. That's the best one right there, isn't it? The best open of the show?
That's a really good one.
That's the best one. That's the most iconic thing you got going here for the franchise. That was a great time. Too long ago, Tony. We need some more iconic
almost 20
like
years ago. Wow.
I know. It's been a while. But hopefully, sooner rather than later, we'll get something else of that quality.
It would be nice.
You know, going back, speaking of 96, good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing out there? Speaking of 96, we all wake up today and we can have that little extra bit of satisfaction with 1996 not being the year that Lawrence Phillips became a blight on the Jacksonville Jaguar franchise.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. To the surprise of no one. I mean, really, Lawrence Phillips suspected of killing his cellmate. Well, let's see. They were in a cell. I'm guessing the door was locked at night, and they found him dead. It was either probably natural causes, suicide, or Lawrence Phillips. Those are your choices.
One or the other.
I think he goes immediately.
If you suspect foul play, there's one guy.
Right to the head of the suspect list. Right now, I don't know. I don't know all the details. I don't really care about all the details.
Apparently, there was another issue in the prison that same night. Like somebody else got taken out.
Somebody else got killed.
Yeah,
right.
Somebody else got killed, and they're wondering if it was like in concert, the two of them doing it at the same time.
Do you ever feel bad that like we watch somebody like we so loved Breaking Bad, right? And one of the best 2 minutes of Breaking Bad in the entirety of the series was the orchestrated
prison
killings?
Hit. Yeah.
The orchestrated prison hits in multiple prisons, all that had to go off within 2 minutes of each other. I don't feel like a bad person, Tony, but perhaps I'm not looking through the right filter at
right.
my own life.
Well,
I don't know.
I told you I've been in the mind of psychopaths for an entire weekend, and Lawrence Phillips continues my week of psychopaths with Robert Durst and L. Ron Hubbard and now Lawrence Phillips and... Man, I tell you, I'm just in a weird place mentally right now after watching the Jinx and watching a multimillionaire get off on murder claiming self-defense when a guy gets shot in the head. They can't find the head, but they find the dismembered body disposed of in a lake. And they're like, the jury bought self-defense when the guy got shot. The head is gone. The only piece of evidence that could corroborate whether or not it was self-defense or not has completely disappeared. And he... cut up the body to dispose of it.
They panicked. Clearly, 12, he panicked.
12 Americans said, I buy that story.
By the way, spoiler alert, hello, I haven't seen that yet, and I guess now I have in some sense
well,
of the word.
That's definitely not the big reveal of that.
Is that
series.
Not the big reveal?
No.
All right. Because I did look for that on some of the many sites out there that offer such things.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't. And watching those jurors, there was one juror sitting there looking at the camera. He's like, I just, it was self-defense. I just don't believe he did that with hate in his heart. I'm like, you people, like, how do you have the wool pulled over your eyes?
Hey,
like
look, we're 5 days into the deliberations with the Aaron Hernandez trial, right? And now look, we
I don't know
here,
what they saw and what they did.
That's the thing. We sit here from afar and we say, well, clearly Aaron Hernandez is a homicidal maniac, right? It appears that way. Court of public opinion, right? I got it right to my opinion. I'm not
sure.
I'm not casting a vote with the jury, but they are supposed to go only on the information presented at the trial. And so we don't know. I didn't watch every, I mean, I guess somebody knows, but I don't know every piece of evidence that was submitted in there.
I don't know what they have and haven't seen, and whatever the outcome of this trial is, he's then going to face trial for a double murder.
Sure.
So
that's why we think he's
not
a homicidal
done for
maniac.
Hernandez,
right. And in addition to that, there's anecdotal evidence that he may have participated in more shootings than that as well. So
but 5 days has you scratching your head like, it's taken 5 days?
Doesn't that, now, obviously, you feel like, why do you even need to say, I'm not a lawyer. I think it's pretty clear I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
But the longer it goes, don't you think Aaron Hernandez has a better chance of getting at least a reduced charge or something like that?
It feels like somebody's holding out. Like, when you get further and further into it, it feels like somebody on that jury is saying, I just don't believe he did.
What you need is Matt Murdock listening to that heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. How far into
four episodes. I was three episodes. I was wrong. I was actually three, not two episodes into Daredevil.
Okay.
Now I'm four. But I got to slow down. Because I'm running out of things to watch right now. I missed Better Call Saul last week because my family was in town. Mm-hmm. And so I watched that. So now I've seen the entire first season of that. You know, I don't do Mad Men. I'm, let's just say, all caught up and more on Game of Thrones right now. All right, I'm good for the month on Game of Thrones. And so I don't know. I've got The Americans. I've got Justified. It's over tonight. It's it. One more, Tony. That's it. Are you kidding me? Raylan, Boyd, what's going to happen? Ava, oh, my goodness. It's going to be fantastic. Love that series. All right, Lawrence Phillips, you go back to 96, Tony. There was talk the Jags were interested in Lawrence Phillips. Obviously, sure. They took Greg Hardy, or Kevin Hardy. Greg Hardy, oh, my gosh. talk about your Freudian slips there on guys who are not the best people, right? Kevin Hardy.
Yes.
I heard the guys on the drill discussing this just a bit this morning. It was an era when the Jags drafted Pro Bowlers. Imagine that. You were allowed to take guys that could eventually get voted to go to Hawaii to play in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
No, it was. And I know we're going to have Rob Ring on here in about 10 minutes to talk about the NFL draft coming up. And I was looking at his latest mock draft, getting ready to talk to him. And the note he has with the Jags, he's got Fowler coming to the Jags at 3 after Williams and Winston come off the board. But he says the Jags have spent their past five first-round picks on offense. So I just went back to look at Jaguars draft history, which is always fun. You know,
sometimes.
It's always fun to go back. And I think it's actually the last four drafts they've done. The last time they picked a defensive player in the first round was Tyson Alualu in 2010. That's the last time that they've taken a defensive player in the first round. And what they've had to show for it with those other offensive picks, considering how good your offense is, Jacksonville, Blaine Gabbert in 2011.
You mean Luke Bawanko. Okay, so we've got Luke to show for it.
Justin Blackmon.
Okay, which, 2012. Did you see a photo going around social media yesterday? Justin Blackmon at somebody's wedding?
Yeah.
Got that little chipmunk cheeks going on, isn't he?
He's got it going. He's got the chubby cheeks going.
He was headed to a wedding, according. He looked happy, you know, and I hope for Justin's sake, I hope he gets his life straight, you know what I mean, and all that, and he is happy, and you know, he's doing the right things, and football shouldn't be his first and foremost consideration, but he looks like he's maybe hit a few wedding buffets at this point. So
it does.
I mean, pictures can sometimes be misleading as well, but who else?
Luke Jokel. Number two overall, who we're waiting to see what he's going to become. But
right.
It sounds like he's put on some good weight this offseason.
I want to get Luke in here when he's like, I was thinking about this yesterday. He's like the first guy I want to talk to when they come in for offseason workouts, which is coming up, right, quickly.
Yeah.
Just to see, because they say he's put on the good muscle, and this is an offseason instead of rehabbing. He spent getting bigger, getting better. Where's he at on all that stuff? So he's definitely okay. So Luke and of course Blake Bortles.
And then Bortles,
right? Who you know hopes for, but that's all they are right now. They're hopes, right?
That Gabbert and Blackmon. Gosh, that hurts. It hurts so bad.
You long for the days of Tyson Alualu, right? Being a selection. At least again, Tyson earned a second contract. But Tony, Kevin Hardy, Tony Brackens, first two picks for the Jags that year, and then they had a second round pick. They took Michael Cheever, and I understand why, right? They're trying to build that offensive line, and Cheever got hurt, and who knows how good a player he could have been. But one pick later, Brian Dawkins, the Jacksonville kid, right? I mean, it was going to be at least in the conversation to go to the Hall of Fame one day. Whether or not he'll get in or not is another story. Who knows how that goes. But they also took Reggie Barlow in that draft, who I got to believe still the best return man in team history, right? It's not been a storied list of guys that have gone down that road. Really not a whole lot to remember from the back end of the 96 draft for the Jags, but thank goodness they don't have that blight on their resume of taking Lawrence Phillips. Just an absolutely atrocious human being as far as that goes. Keyshawn, Kevin Hardy, Simeon Rice, and then the Hall of Famer Jonathan Ogden, of course. The Jags had Baselli. Mm-hmm. Imagine if they'd taken Ogden and played those guys as bookends. And then as it turned out, obviously they picked up Leon Searcy and things worked well in the 90s when Leon was here for his 4 years. But imagine then Baselli moves on, right? You switch Ogden to the left side and never miss a beat. That could have been good as well. But Kevin Hardy was a good player. But Jonathan Ogden, a Hall of Famer out of that group and the only Hall of Famer so far out of the 1996 class. As you mentioned, Rob Rang, CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com, has a two-round mock out, as well as his, we talked yesterday a bit about some of his under-the-radar players that he likes. So we'll get into various draft stuff with Rob coming up in about 6-7 minutes. Also, Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, longtime Jacksonville fixture, as ESPN did a draft synopsis for every team, basically Football Outsiders breaking down team needs, Scouts Inc. breaking down best available at those positions of need, and then D-Rock, as the Jags beat guy for ESPN, stepped in to make some predictions of which directions they may actually go in the draft. So we'll talk with D-Rock coming up in about an hour at 11:15 this morning. Today's question of the day by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, you know, a little inside the business. Not everybody's into the whole draft analyst thing, and that's fine. But we ask you today, out of the myriad draft analysts that are out there, Rob Rang included, Dane Brugler, Will Brinson, Pete Prisco, that's just CBS right there, McShay and Kuiper, Jeremiah, Mayock, Josh Norris getting some love today, a whole bunch of guys out there. Tony Pauline, one of our favorites. Who is your single favorite? Who's the guy you most want to listen to? Doesn't mean they're always right. Just means you like the insight that they bring. Whatever the case may be, I don't want to put words in your mouth. You tell us who you like and why. And those are what we're looking for today on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Tyler as well. We figured out the Friday Top 5. We'll unveil that later so you have a little bit of time to think about it. I don't think it's something you need a whole lot of time to think about, but we'll throw that out there later for what we're doing. David Garrard coming in. I don't know if David Garrard's going to fit in with the Friday Top 5.
He'll work it out.
You think so?
Probably.
Maybe. I don't know if he's going to be able to come up with five on the list. I don't know. Maybe I'm selling Dave short on that one. But we'll lay that out for you a little bit later on. You want to get in later, 641-1010, the number as always. You can also post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Let's get rolling. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Rob Rang straight ahead from CBSSports.com on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, NFL draft, a little over 2 weeks away. I don't know, is it the home stretch, Tony? We've been saying that for a month, I think.
I don't know.
It'll be here when it gets here. If you don't like the draft, you probably don't like the show for the next couple weeks, because what are you going to talk about on a Jaguar/NFL show with the draft coming up? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Let's welcome in Rob Rang from CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com, here on 1010XL. What's up, Rob? How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Hi, guys.
Rob, let's start with the big story. If you call it a debate right now, Ron Jaworski came out yesterday and said he thinks Mariota's going to go number one. I don't know how strong he is in that, but there seems to be not a consensus, but a growing pool of support that Mariota might be the better NFL option compared to Jameis Winston when all things are considered in here. How do you feel about these two guys head-to-head? And secondly, presuming Winston does go number one, what will the market be like, in your opinion, for Marcus Mariota in terms of potential trade-ups, either with Tennessee or with Jacksonville in the two or three spots?
Well, I think that there is a debate. You know, Jameis Winston is my top-ranked player, not only top-ranked quarterback, but top-ranked player overall. I've been reporting and certainly believe that Jameis Winston will be the number one overall pick. That said, I have Marcus Mariota as the number four overall prospect. So, you know, I can certainly understand why some would have Mariota ranked ahead of Jameis Winston. That said, I live in the Pacific Northwest. I am surrounded by University of Oregon Duck fans. I have watched every single game that Marcus Mariota played in while at the University of Oregon. I'm telling you right now that he is not even close to as accurate from the pocket as Jameis Winston. And I know that you can throw out the 18 interceptions that Jameis Winston threw a year ago. You can throw out the, you know, amazing completion percentage, touchdown to interception ratio that Marcus Mariota had throughout his career. The reality is the Oregon's offense significantly eased the types of throws that Marcus Mariota was asked to make. All this talk about how he is going to struggle making a jump to a pro-style offense is legitimate. It's one of the reasons why Marcus Mariota, in a perfect world, should sit for at least half of a season, probably closer to a full season, before he is going to be playing. Obviously, Tampa Bay Buccaneers are being built to win now with their dynamic pass catchers that they have, the big pass catchers that they have. I think that Jameis Winston will go number one overall. The conversation of Mariota, of course, starts at number two overall at Tennessee Titans. I think ultimately their general manager, Rustin Webster, is going to go with the safer player in Leonard Williams or a trade back. Marcus Mariota is the wild card of this draft. He can go as early as number two. The lowest I could see him sliding down is number 12 overall to the still quarterback needy Cleveland Browns. I still believe that the Cleveland Browns, San Diego Chargers, and Philadelphia Eagles are very much in the mix to move up should Marcus Mariota start to slide. I have him sliding number six overall to the New York Jets. Don't necessarily believe the Jets will take him there. Just think that's the spot that Marcus Mariota is ultimately going to wind up going.
Rob, I'm torn between a couple ideas here, and the Jameis Winston-Marcus Mariota debate is what's shining a light on it for me a little bit. We call this time of year liar season, and it's the time of year where it feels like teams are trying to put themselves in the best position in the draft, and that means they may be putting out false information. It's also the time of year where guys are who are connected with front offices throughout the league, guys like Mayock and Jaworski and yourself and some of the other experts we talk to, are getting better and better information from the teams about how scouts and front offices actually feel about these prospects. So I'm torn between the idea of, is the Marcus Mariota bump just a smokescreen from some team, or is this legit? This is how front offices feel, and we didn't get that real sense of that until this week.
No, I think that it is a little bit of the predictable April Lions season. You know, in my conversations with scouts, with coaches, with general managers over the last several months, it has been essentially a consensus that Jameis Winston was the top quarterback in this draft class. Just like it was a consensus that Amari Cooper, for example, was the top wide receiver in this draft class, or Dante Fowler was the top pass rusher in this draft class. But once you get into that silly season of workouts, conversations, you know, as far as interviews that teams have with players and the investigating that they do off the field, all these types of things that just kind of cloud what matters the most, and that is simply, can the player play the game of football at a high level? So I think when it's all said and done, we are going to see Marcus Mariota wind up being the number two quarterback. I think you're going to see every team, again, predictably, every team in the top five or six is going to be floating out the idea that, yes, they too are considering Marcus Mariota because they're hoping that a team like Cleveland Browns, who have, of course, the two first-round picks, or a team like the Philadelphia, the Chip Kelly, who is just, you know, throwing caution to the wind to do whatever he wants to do with the roster, that one of them is going to present one of those top, those teams selecting the top five, a Robert Griffin-type haul of trade picks, just three first-round selections to move up 10 spots or so. So I think that's why you're hearing so much buzz about this. I certainly respect Jaworski and Mayock and others who are ranking Marcus Mariota as the number one quarterback in this draft class. And in some cases, it even reported that he's going to go to Tampa Bay with number one overall selection. I'm sticking with what I've been told and what I see on the field, and that is that Jameis Winston is a significantly more polished pro quarterback, and that's why he will be the number one overall pick in the 2016 draft.
Rob Rang here with us on 1010XL, CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com. Rob, it's not as simple in my mind that the Jags only like Leonard Williams and Dante Fowler, and then if Williams is gone, Fowler would be the pick, as your mock draft says. I'm not saying you were saying that it's that simple, but there seems to be a consensus building, correctly or incorrectly, that those are the two guys. Let me ask you this. In terms of pure need, Fowler may fit slightly better than Williams here because of the way the roster is constructed right now, but let's say the quarterbacks do go 1-2. What do you see the Jags doing? What should they do in a choice if it came down to Williams and Fowler?
Yeah, that's a great question because I think it obviously could happen. I think that Jacksonville would be exploring all trade opportunities because I think if you're looking for that classic Leo defensive end, then Clemson's Vic Beasley, Nebraska's Randy Gregory are both, athletically speaking, size-wise, they both fit in with Gus Bradley's team every bit as well as Dante Fowler does. Leonard Williams, in my opinion, this might be the safest player in this entire draft class, so he certainly would make some sense. You got to believe that Gus Bradley would love to coach a player like Leonard Williams who has that combination of size, strength, and an overall athleticism, and of course, Gus Bradley with his connections to Pete Carroll and Pete Carroll's connections to the University of Southern California, you know, it just makes it that much more intriguing. As I'm sure you guys know, Leonard Williams is a state of Florida, a native of the state of Florida, and so there's that homecoming aspect as well. But when it's all said and done, taking out trades as a possibility, which of course the Jaguars will be looking to any trade opportunities that are presented to them, I just think if Jacksonville stays at number three overall, the far likeliest scenario has them going with Dante Fowler because of the versatility that he provides. He not only can be that Leo defensive end in Gus Bradley's system, he also can slide inside, be a penetrating defensive tackle, can play off the line of scrimmage as a linebacker, things that he did and did very well at the University of Florida against high level of competition. I think, again, this is one of those times where it's better just to watch the tape and realize that Dante Fowler is truly one of the best players in this draft class, and he fits in with Jacksonville's team best. Don't get too cute. Go with a simple option. I think that's Dante Fowler, number three overall.
You know, we're hearing Williams, one of the mild criticisms is that he doesn't impact the game enough on third down. He's not your classic rush end. Who does he compare to? Because, I mean, we see Ndamukong Suh get a record-setting contract, so defensive tackle can clearly be valued extremely highly. Who does Williams compare best to? Give us an idea of a current NFL player.
Well, there's been two players that I've heard a lot of comparisons to, and I don't think that either one of them are a perfect comparison. That's why I'm going to mention both of them. And both of them are all pros, and J.J. Watt for Houston Texans and Gerald McCoy for Tampa Bay Buccaneers. In both cases, we're talking about a player who is stronger than he is quick. And so I don't think that you're necessarily going to see Leonard Williams come in and ever rack up 10 sacks. And that's the thing. I think that people expect that out of a number two overall pick, perhaps the best player in the entire draft. They're expecting big-time success against the quarterback as a pass rusher. And that's not Leonard Williams' game. He's a classic 3-4 defensive end, a 5 technique. He uses his strength, the point of attack, to disrupt the action. He knocks down some passes at the line of scrimmage. He is very, very good against the run. He's just not a quick, penetrating 3 technique defensive tackle, the type like Ndamukong Suh that is able to generate consistent pressure on the quarterback. And that's why I think that there is a possibility he slides a little bit down the board should he get past the Tennessee Titans at number two, because, of course, they are building a 3-4 defense. They have built their edge rushers with the signing, a re-signing of Derek Morgan and bringing in Brian Araxpo from Washington. All they need is a classic 5 technique defensive end. That's why he is likely to go there.
I think you explained very well why you'd have Dante Fowler ahead of those other pass rushers, but I know fans here in Jacksonville, a lot of them want to see that number three pick be Vic Beasley, and you mentioned him as a potential Leo in this league, that he fits that role very well. What doesn't he do that Dante Fowler Jr. does?
Eat. I mean, he's 240 pounds, you know, and so that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, you're going to have some concerns about, you know, is he going to be able to physically hold up at the point of attack for the long haul? There's no doubt in my mind that Vic Beasley can come in and compete for a Defensive Rookie of the Year award as a rookie, just because I think that he will come in and be a potential 10 sack kind of a guy. I just don't know that he's going to get you much other tackles in terms of run support. And of course, the game is transitioning more to a pass-happy NFL. And so I think that there is certainly a rationale for making Vic Beasley that player, and I am very, very high on Vic Beasley. He has been in my top 10 all year long, even though there's a lot of people out there talking that, you know, he didn't have the senior season that a lot of people expected. I mean, the thing is that as one-dimensional as you could say that Leonard Williams might be against the run, Vic Beasley is a little bit one-dimensional against the pass. He's got a spectacular speed move. He's got great quickness back to the inside. He's much, much stronger than you would think at 6'3", 245 pounds, roughly. As he demonstrated not only at the combine with 30-plus repetitions of 225 pounds, but you see it on tape as well. And so I do believe that he could fit in. I just don't know that he is the best fit for your team long-term. That's why I think that Dante Fowler, is the better overall player because of the versatility, the consistency, and the greater size that he provides.
Tell us why, I'm just curious, your rankings, you have guys like Beasley and Shane Ray ahead of Bud Dupree, but in your mock draft, you actually project Bud Dupree to go ahead of those guys, number 8 to the Atlanta Falcons. Is there something particular about the way he fits there, or is it the raw ability? Why are teams in love with Bud Dupree, and why do you think it's possible he goes before some of these other pass rushers?
Well, he's a dynamic athlete, but he was used in a variety of ways in Kentucky, and so I don't believe that he is quite the finished product as some of the other edge rushers. And I love Bud Dupree. I mean, again, he's another player that I've had in the first round all throughout the season. It's kind of interesting how some of the other draft analysts out there have kind of warmed up to him since the combine when he put up the spectacular workout. But, of course, you know, he was the SEC's reigning sack champion for his career. So this isn't like one of those workout warrior types. So, you know, to me, the fit with the Atlanta Falcons and Dan Quinn, the former defensive line coach at the University of Florida, former defensive coordinator with the Seattle Seahawks, Dan Quinn's experience is working with defensive linemen. He teaches the hand use as well as any coach I know in the NFL. And that's one of the areas that I personally believe that Alvin Bud Dupree really needs to work on. He has the length, he has the strength, he has the athleticism, he has the instincts, he has the work ethic. He's got everything that you're looking for. I just don't know that he is ready to come into the NFL and truly pop, at least not the way that he did at Kentucky. But with a savvy defensive line coach, I really think that he can kind of come out of his shell a little bit, so to speak. I think that he'd be a perfect fit for the Atlanta Falcons. A very intriguing fit for the New York Giants, picking one pick later at number 9 overall. That said, I don't know that he is quite as good of a fit for some of the other clubs going that high. So I personally think that Bud Dupree has a chance to go in the top 10, but if he doesn't go a number 8 to the Atlanta Falcons or number 9 overall to the New York Giants, that we could see him slide a little bit lower into the team, perhaps the New Orleans Saints, number 13 overall, would be the other earlier option.
I'm pretty convinced the Jags are going to be going defensive line with that number 3 pick. The lone exception to that to me would be Amari Cooper and the potential of them going with the wide receiver out of Alabama. When you compare Cooper to the receivers we saw in last year's draft class, Sammy Watkins, Odell Beckham Jr., Mike Evans, all very successful in their rookie years in the league, is that a reflection of where the league is going, or is that more of a reflection of how talented those guys were at the top of the draft last year?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, certainly last year was an extraordinary crop of wide receiver. I mean, it was an extraordinary draft in general. You know, Pittsburgh Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert said it was the most talented draft he'd seen in 30 years, and it's certainly the most talented draft I've seen, and I've been covering the league since 2001. Now, this year's class is very good as well, especially at wide receiver. I'd argue that's the strongest position in this draft class. I certainly think that Amari Cooper deserves to be mentioned with those top receivers you mentioned a year ago. I personally was not as high as Odell Beckham as he proved himself to be a year ago. So I've been here, you know, kind of patting myself on the back here with Vic Beasley and Bud Dupree. You know, I was wrong on Odell Beckham, and I didn't think that he'd be able to come into the NFL and have the immediate impact that he had, despite the fact that he was coming from a pro-style offense. I just thought too many drops throughout his career at LSU, and then suddenly he developed the best hands of any receiver in the league as a rookie. So, you know, that just kind of shows the way that these things can work. I think that physically speaking, Amari Cooper is very similar to Odell Beckham. He also will have an occasional, you know, concentration drop where he just simply loses concentration, perhaps looks at the defender before he hauls in the football. But like Odell Beckham, when Cooper is really focusing in, he has that kind of Hoover hand. The ball just kind of naturally is glued to his fingertips when he is focusing on the football instead of trying to make a defender miss. And he does make defenders miss so very well because he has a first step acceleration to him that you can't really time so much as you can just see it on the field. That's why he's consistently able to get open, why he's consistently able to run away from defenders. And it's one of the reasons why I think that he is truly among this elite this draft elite prospects, it would make a great deal of sense, frankly, to Jacksonville should they elect to go in that direction.
Well, let's assume they don't, okay? And it's the second round rolls along, and you've got a mock draft out. Let's say it plays out the way it does, and the Jags are on the clock. Philip Dorsett is there. Nelson Aguilar is there. There'd be some Jag fans, I think, would be hoping one of those guys would come in because they've expressed an interest in adding somebody to play in the slot with Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson on the outside. But you've got them taking an offensive lineman out of South Carolina, A.J. Cann. Sell me on A.J. Cann. Give me a scouting report on this guy and why you like him so much.
Well, he's a four-year starter at guard, which I still believe is an area of concern for Jacksonville. He also can slide inside to play center. That's one of the reasons why his stock is kind of flying under the radar right now, because he's not a flashy athlete. He's just a really good football player, and I still believe that Jackson needs to add a couple of more really good football players. And frankly, part of the reason why I think that Jacksonville may not go with a wide receiver in the first or second rounds this year is because I am very high on the last year's picks, Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee. Lee especially. I think that Marquise Lee is a very similar type of athlete as Nelson Aguilar and as Philip Dorsett from the U. I think you're talking about a guy who does have better speed than he demonstrated during workouts. He has great agility. I think that he is going to come in and have a much better sophomore season, so to speak, than a disappointing rookie season in Jacksonville. So that's one of the reasons why I think that Jacksonville may elect to go on another direction with their first and second round picks. But again, with A.J. Cann, I just believe, and I'm sure that Gus Bradley certainly believes this as well, at least in my experience talking with him, that you continue to win in this league at the line of scrimmage. I think when you make the move to get a young quarterback like they did a year ago at Blake Bortles, and you must protect him, I still believe that is the biggest area of concern for Jacksonville, at least before that they made some moves during free agency. So I think that will be one of Jacksonville's goals this year, is to continue to fortify the protection around Blake Bortles.
Todd Gurley finally going to get his knee looked at this week up there in Indianapolis. The NFL is going to get an opportunity to check out Todd Gurley to see where he is physically. If he comes out of that looking good, if they feel good about that knee, how high do you think he could potentially go in this draft?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a number of clubs this year that I think could make Todd Gurley a first-round pick. I currently have he and Wisconsin's Melvin Gordon both going in the first round. I have them going to San Diego Chargers. Melvin Gordon first, number 17 overall, Arizona Cardinals, picking Todd Gurley, I believe, at number 24 overall. Both very much in that first round mix. If Todd Gurley's knee does come back with with significant confidence that he is going to be able to come back from that knee injury, then I think that he is going to leap over Melvin Gordon, will be the first running back selected. Perhaps San Diego Chargers, number 17 overall. I think that's a great fit. Arizona, as I mentioned, Dallas Cowboys, because of the fact that they lost to Marco Murray makes sense. Baltimore Ravens as well. If one of those backs, of course, fell down to Jacksonville in the top of the second round, well, then, yeah, you're talking about two of the best players in the draft, certainly among the top 32 talents, but only because the depth of this running back class and the perception that teams don't value running backs as much could push one of them down the board in Jacksonville's lap. At that point, all bets are off. Jacksonville should be going with the home run hitter at running back.
There he is, Rob Rang, simply on Twitter, at Rob Rang, R-A-N-G, just like it sounds. Rob, great work at CBSSports.com, NFLDraftScout.com. Enjoy all the mock drafts, the under-the-radar prospect article you just put out, and certainly your appearances here. Thanks for taking a few minutes. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, you got it. Rob Rang, CBSSports.com. Love him talking up Marquise Lee for a breakout.
Yeah.
Second year here in Jacksonville. What does Dante Fowler do better than Vic Beasley? Eat. He eats better. All right, we got to take a quick timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear a few thoughts of Dante Fowler as well as Amari Cooper. Brian Sexton sat down with those guys as they visited Everbank last week. All of that courtesy of Jaguars.com, where we encourage you to go check out the full interviews Brian has done with numerous draft prospects that have made their way through here at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, heads up for Stick Your Angle over here, Tony. We've got Mike DiRocco. D-Rock going to join us coming up at 11:15 from ESPN.com. 30 minutes from now, talking Jags, talking draft. La-di-da-di-da. That's what we do this time of year, baby. Dante Fowler, Amari Cooper among a slew of visitors, 20 and all, that came in through Everbank Field last week. Was it just last week? Man, it seems like a while ago now, doesn't it? It's weird how time does tricks on your mind. But Brian Sexton has done great sit-downs with all of these guys. They get a little more insight into, you know, what they bring to the table as players, as people. They're not all going to end up here. Maybe none of them do, but chances are at least one of these guys that's visited will end up here.
I feel like they probably talked to the Jaguars' first-round pick.
I would think so.
Probably.
In that group of 20 you're talking about. Right, because, I mean, they hit Leonard Williams, they hit Dante Fowler, they hit Vic Beasley, they hit a bunch of the usual suspects. Randy Gregory, I mean, in a trade-down scenario. There are a lot of guys that they covered. But again, courtesy of Jaguars.com, where we would hope you would go and check out the interviews in their entirety, and not just with these guys that we're going to play a couple of clips from, but Brian sat down with just about every prospect that came through, and he asked Dante Fowler if he knows Gus Bradley's scheme, and if so, does he see himself being a good fit in that scheme?
Yeah, I've been watching Gus, you know, before I even came to the Jaguars. I've always been that type of guy. I've been around football my life, so I watch football. And when you watch football so much, you come upon and you want to start knowing the coaches, who's coaching this defense and who's coaching, you know, those schemes. And, you know, as I started learning the game, my knowledge started getting better for the game. I started knowing schemes and what 3-4 schemes and 4-3 schemes were, how they work, you know, how players, you know, get used. And I see how Coach Gus, you know, uses his Leo and his defense, and, you know, that when I see some of my intangibles and some of the things that I do, Gus does the same thing with his Leo, so I feel like I'd be a great fit.
Dante Fowler, a confident guy, speaking with Brian Sexton on Jaguars.com, was also asked, look, we've seen it. Dante Fowler's, his name keeps appearing at the top of these pass rushers in this draft, and there's a bunch of them in this draft. Brian Sexton asked Dante Fowler Jr. what makes him stand out from the group.
I think I separate myself when it comes to that. I know that there are a lot of great pass rushers, but, you know, I separate myself as in just being a complete, more of a complete, polished, you know, defensive end. I understand that you're a pass rusher. Everybody has to go get a quarterback, and, you know, we got some guys that will, including me. But as far as stepping in right now and for them team needs that needs a pass rusher or a defensive end that needs to step in right now and contribute and won't have, you know, too many concerns, I feel like that's me.
If you went to Vegas right now, Tony, with 10 grand and bet on one guy being a Jacksonville Jaguar coming out of this draft, wouldn't he be the safest bet in your mind right now?
Probably.
Safe doesn't mean he'd be the right guy.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's only a 30% chance or whatever the case. Maybe that means 70% chance it's not. But out of any one single player, I think that's the safest bet, because I see scenarios where Williams is off the board and there's no trade market for Mariota. I see scenarios where the quarterbacks go and the Jags just think Fowler is a better fit than Williams for what they're trying to do based on the roster composition. Now, had you done that last year, chances are you would have lost your 10 grand, because you probably would not have said Blake Bortles. I'm not talking to you, Hayes Carline, okay?
No. Yeah, it was Mack or Watkins. That was
pretty
the discussion
much, right?
Last year when we got to draft day.
Right, one of those two was the likely favorite as far as that went. Amari Cooper, could he be a wild card in this mix? We talked to Rob Rang about him a moment ago, and Brian Sexton sat down with him again at Jaguars.com, listened for the full interview, and he talked about his competitiveness. And did that come out while he was at Alabama, or has he always been that kind of a player?
I feel like I've always been that way since I was small. I will compete with anyone at anything. It can be throwing a rock, anything. I'll compete, and I always want to be the best at it. If I want to do something, I want to be the best at it. So.
Amari Cooper also asked by Brian Sexton on Jaguars.com about why Alabama is putting so many players into the league.
It's his coaching style. He brings the best out of each player. He wants the best out of each player. Practices are hard. You have to be mentally tough to get through it.
You know, different personalities, right? You got Dante Fowler. Give him a question. He's going to roll with it, and that's fun to hear. Amari Cooper seems like a very thoughtful young man, right? He's just different. He's just quieter. Didn't seem to impact his productivity whatsoever.
No.
Right? In fact, productivity-wise, Amari Cooper dwarfs Dante Fowler. Just at the relative positions. That's not a knock on Dante Fowler. Amari Cooper dwarfed just about everybody, productivity-wise in college football the last few years. He's just, you know, the way D-Rock put it, and we'll talk to Mike coming up in 25 minutes here, was that his feeling is the only way the Jags take a wide receiver at three is if they are 100% convinced that the guy they take is the true number one guy in your depth chart. They're not bringing him in to be part of a three-man mix. They're saying, you jump to the alpha dog right here. Because if you don't, then why spend that pick? Let's get an alpha dog at another position. We're in a draft, as you heard Rob Rank say, he thinks wide receiver is probably the deepest position in this entire draft. Once again, we're seeing a proliferation, Tony, of high output, high octane passing offenses in college football. We're getting more NFL ready wide receivers than ever coming in at the same time. And whereas it used to be running back clearly had an edge on these guys making an impact early, I think it still does to some degree. You're seeing more and more wide receivers now beat that curve. The curve now maybe has changed over the last couple of years.
No, it really has, and it's interesting watching the way that the NFL game is changing, especially compared to college football, where the NFL has had elements of that spread come in here in the past 5 or 6 years, but you're watching defenses in a lot of ways kind of beat that out of NFL offenses. You don't want to expose your quarterback to too much. RG3 was dynamic that first year, but after the ACL injury, the ankle last year, who even knows if he's going to be the future of that position for the Washington Redskins at this point. You watch Colin Kaepernick take a step back when he was asked to stay in the pocket and start making throws from there. I think that feeling we had of this wave coming in, that directly from college football to NFL style of football, still translates to what you're doing at wide receiver more than it does anywhere else on the field right now. And because of how wide open offenses are in college, you got more guys that are coming in ready to play. And I think it makes it a lot more difficult on scouts and NFL teams to find guys, not only at the quarterback position, but defensive line. I think it's hard. In today's college football game, I think it's hard to find guys that truly translate because nobody's playing what they're going to play. Nobody's doing what they're going to be asked to do when they get to the NFL. They're asked to read the quarterback on an option, and you're not going to be asked to do that a lot once you get to the NFL. So it's, I think the job of scouts and NFL front offices is getting more and more difficult with trying to find guys that can be special at some areas, and it's getting easier at others, and I think wide receiver is one of those spots.
I still think the two things those positions, wide receiver and running back, struggle with the most, wide receiver is A, getting off the line of scrimmage, right? Because how many times do you see those college DBs play 8 yards off the ball?
Sure.
Right? I mean, ridiculous. So can you beat press coverage? And for running backs, it's pass protection. It's not the running ability. The running ability is typically either there by the time you're 21, 22 years old, or it's not.
Right.
You're not going to improve much as a runner. Coming up next, we've got this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike DeRocco from ESPN.com coming up in about 20 minutes here with you. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, it's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank Field on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Football can't get back soon enough. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Birthdays! That's what I got for you, Tony.
Mm-hmm. A
couple of odd connections I had to these two birthdays today.
Okay.
1965. Stan Humphries was born on this date in football history. 50 years old. You remember Stan Humphries?
Not really.
San Diego Charger quarterback back in the 1990s. Okay.
Vaguely.
When I first started playing fantasy football, before I played in head-to-head leagues, I'd play in the USA Today salary cap game, right? Where you literally had to call in lineup changes to a phone number. You had, you know, I mean, it was great. You, like, mailed it. They mailed you your results every week. They didn't email them to you. They mailed them to you in an envelope, old school. But one day, I'm filling out the lineup, and I'm co-owning it with another guy. You know my friend Bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
My best man at my wedding. And we have this team, and we need a quarterback, and we're down to just a little bit. And Stan Humphries was the most expensive quarterback we could afford, which wasn't very high on the list, right? But he had been playing reasonably well, and, you know, you never know in fantasy, right? So we go with Stan Humphries. What happens, like, first drive of the game, Stan Humphries gets a concussion, his umpteenth of his career, never plays again in the National Football League. Never played another snap.
Yeah, I'm looking at Stan Humphries' career stats. You got a high watermark for touchdowns in a season for Stan Humphries?
Let me get 13.
18.
18, all right.
18 in 1996. He was a stud. 18 touchdowns and 13 picks.
That's about the time that I was playing the USA Today salary cap game. The other birthday today, happy birthday, Joe Hayden, former Gator, 26 years young today. I was doing a game with Frank Frangie, Gino Toretta, Touchdown Radio, doing sidelines, and it was a Florida game. Can't remember who they're playing, but Florida wins the game. And I'm behind the bench, and I say, hey, Joe, when the clock hits zero, can I ask you a few questions? Yeah, no problem. So I'm talking to him, interviewing him for a second there. He's a great guy. And, here comes the firm, you know, the UF. They, you know, what are you doing? You can't talk to our student athletes. Da, 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 da. It's just, I mean, just calm down, people. Just calm down, all right? I'm asking him how he thinks he played today, whatever the case may be. But they've got it on lockdown. In Gainesville.
He was just about to tell me how badly he wants out of this crap hole campus.
Yes, right? I mean, what do you think he's going to say? He won the game. I'm asking him a couple questions for national radio. Back off, buddy. Joe Hayden, wasn't your fault, pal. All right, so happy birthday to those guys. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, every time we get a story about Greg Jennings visiting somebody, especially here in Jacksonville, I get the questions of, why aren't the Jaguars interested in Michael Crabtree? What's going on with Michael Crabtree? Why aren't they having Michael Crabtree in for a visit? Well, don't worry about it anymore. Wide receiver Michael Crabtree is set to become a member of the Oakland Raiders. After a quiet month for Crabtree in free agency, he announced last night on Twitter, quote, it's official, I'm a Raider. Longtime Pittsburgh Steelers cornerback Ike Taylor has announced his retirement. I doubt that will be met with as much fanfare as Troy Polamalu's was at the end of last week. Also, we've been talking about it a little bit today. Former Nebraska football star, sixth overall draft pick, Lawrence Phillips, back in the news. In case you forgot, Phillips is about 5.5 years into a 31-year prison sentence for twice choking his girlfriend and driving his car into three teenagers after a pickup football game, where he was obviously upset. Phillips is now under investigation for murder after his cellmate Damian Soward was found dead in their cell on Saturday morning at Kern Valley State Prison. Soward, the victim, was serving 82 years to life for first-degree murder. Every time I hear anything about Phillips, I go back to a story that we briefly mentioned earlier today, but I hear Pete Prisco talk about this all the time, several times through the last 10 years or so, about how close the Jags were to actually selecting Lawrence Phillips in the 1996 draft. Coughlin compared Lawrence Phillips to Jim Brown going into that draft. Seriously compared him to Jim Brown. Really was thinking about taking him with that number 2 overall pick. Instead of Phillips, the Jags wind up taking Kevin Hardy.
Does Jim Brown have a history of domestic violence I'm not aware of? I mean, because what's the comparison?
My goodness, what a bullet they dodged.
Hey, Tom. Tom didn't get them all right, but at least he made the right pick. Anyone other than Lawrence Phillips was the right pick,
yes.
Right? Anyone other than... And you go back, and I'm reading these stories yesterday. I'm on Deadspin. I'm looking through the comments section, and, you know, there people are like, you know, I was in Nebraska at the time, and you should have seen Cornhusker fans twist themselves in knots to morally justify Tom Osborne deciding to play Lawrence Phillips in the Fiesta Bowl. Someone quoted, and I'll be honest with you, I'm passing this along anecdotally because I didn't go back to research whether this was accurate or not, but they said that they recalled Osborne at the time talking about the incident where he dragged the girl down the steps by her hair that, well, I wouldn't call it a beating, right? I mean, come on. I mean, Tom Osborne sits on the bowl selection committee. Tom Osborne was elected to Congress 3 times. Tom Osborne was as cutthroat. You know, he has this image of, I'm above the cedar aspects of the game. Unless I need Lawrence Phillips in the lineup. You know, unless I need the guy who just dragged his girlfriend down the steps by her hair in the lineup. I just, oh, man.
Well, Lawrence Phillips was obviously a guy who was worthy of a second and third chance.
I mean, that's not the one incident that he had. It was multiple incidents. Remember he drove, there was a story, he was playing pickup football, and there was a fight that broke. He was playing pickup against, like, high school kids, okay? This is probably after he's washed out of the league.
He drove his car
it on the field and hit 3 of them with his car.
Yeah, he was on trial for the domestic violence against his girlfriend, and then the next trial was for running his car into those three people, and that's how he got the 31-year sentence. 31 years in prison. It's about to get a whole lot longer. Lawrence Phillips is not going to see the light of day.
Honestly,
again.
You're 31 years in. You probably got to do a lot of things to survive in prison that are going to extend your sentence anyway. You know what right. I mean? Lawrence Phillips, thankfully, didn't seem like he was getting out of prison. Hopefully this makes it a mortal certainty that he doesn't get out of prison.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was talented enough that an NFL franchise took him with the sixth overall pick in the NFL draft. Sixth overall pick, and that guy is now under investigation for murder in a prison cell, serving a 31-year sentence in there with a guy who was serving a life sentence for first-degree murder. That's where his life wound up. How the heck can you go from a guy that is, at that point in your life, you're going to get drafted in the top 10 of the NFL draft to murdering someone in a prison cell? How does that happen?
Right, not murdering someone and ending up in a prison cell. Murdering someone in the prison cell, right, which you're already in, serving a 31-year sentence.
Holy cow.
Nice work, Lawrence Phillips, said no one ever. All right, coming up next, Mike DiRocco, ESPN.com, a Jaguar beat writer for the Four Letter Network. And we'll talk draft and Jags offseason with Mike overall. That's coming up next year on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today, live at Everbank, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Let's say hello to D-Rock from ESPN, NFL Nation Jaguar reporter and friend of everyone, not just friend of the program. What's up, D-Rock? How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you gentlemen doing?
We're doing okay. We're hanging in there, trying to figure out if you're going to be in, I guess, synchronicity heaven if the Jags draft another Gator with Dante Fowler coming over with your Gainesville ties. But before we get to that, let's start with a little look back at free agency. We haven't had you on in a while. What do you make of the Jags haul? Very aggressive in the first 24 hours of free agency.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we were all pretty on target that they were going to go after Julius Thomas pretty hard. They managed to get him. Landing them highest paid tight end. I think that's a huge bet for them. Obviously, a huge benefit for Blake Bortles. I like the Jarek Odrick signing, and I like the Dan Scuda signing. I thought those are probably names that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily associate with or really have a good idea with. But after looking at them and watching how they played and seeing some film on those guys, those are two really good players, and the Jaguars did a good job landing those two. I like the Parnell signing. I'm just not sure, you know, what kind of a player he's going to be. That one, I think, is more of a gamble than any of the other signings, of the frontline signings. I would think Sergio Brown's a bit of a gamble as well as Devon House. But, you know, that offensive line, as we've talked about before, is a huge problem for this team, and they think they've addressed the right tackle spot, but I'm still not completely convinced. I need to see it from him before I sit there and say, yeah, it was a great signing. But certainly athletic-wise and when he played in the limited role, he did a solid job. So overall, I liked what they did. I think it would have been a home run had they been able to somehow land McCourty if he hadn't re-signed with the Patriots. Then that clearly would have made them the winners overall in the entire NFL in free agency.
Yeah, and as I said, Mike, if they had signed McCourty, some of those guys, the secondary guys, maybe Scuda, House, and Brown wouldn't be here. Maybe that would have been better, you know, to have McCourty, but, you know, you wouldn't have had everything. But the Parnell thing, the contract clearly indicates, as you said, they think they've got the answer at right tackle. So, you know, whether or not he turns out to be, I think going into the draft, they're thinking of that as a position that's been taken care of, don't you?
Yeah, I don't think, once they signed him, you know, I didn't think there was any chance they were going to take a tackle in the first round at number three anyway, but I didn't rule it out if they were to drop further down into the first round. Now I don't think there's any way they're going to take a tackle even if they move down. I think that was very remote anyway, but I think it's completely gone now. But, you know, there's a lot to like about Parnell. I mean, he's big, he's athletic. And the thing that people need to realize, too, is he only played, I think, a year of college football or 2 years of college football. I mean, he was a basketball player 4 years right. at Ole Miss. And he's still relatively new to this game. So, and he hasn't played a whole lot either. So when you factor those two things in there, there's probably a little bit more film on him in terms of their confidence about his ability to play at the NFL level than if he were just a rookie coming out. But, you know, they really, really like him. And you're right. They think he's the answer.
halfway through this offseason now for this Jaguars team. They've done pretty much what they're going to do probably in free agency. Maybe Greg Jennings winds up being a Jaguar over the course of the next couple days or weeks or whatever. We're not sure where that story is going to wind up. But halfway through it, obviously the draft going to be the other half. But when you look at this team and this front office going into year three with Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley, and the expectations are going to be much higher for this team to start winning games this year than they have been for the first 2 years, do you feel good about what they were able to accomplish in free agency with the opportunities they had and the flexibility they were given with how much money they had to spend coming into this free agency period?
Yeah, I do. I think that Dave, you know, I think Dave's done a really good job in free agency the first, I guess this will be his third class, but his first two classes, and they found some really quality players in free agency. Now, you don't hit home runs on all of them, but, you know, guys like, Chris Clemens was a solid get. Cindric Marks certainly was a very, very good get. And a guy that doesn't get enough credit, Alan Ball, is a really good get for this team. So I think Dave's done a really good job, and I think he continued that this year. I like the direction they're going in. Helping Blake Bortles, as Dave said, I think at the end of the season news conference, is going to be their number one priority. Now, a lot of people took that to mean, hey, well, they're just going to sign offensive guys. That's not the case. Getting better defensively helps him, but certainly it's still like they've solidified the right tackle spot, which was huge. They've given him one of the two or three best pass catching tight ends in the league at this point right now. They're in really, really good shape. If they nail this first round pick and they manage to get some more quality starters in rounds 2, 3, maybe even 4, as they have the last couple of years, then yeah, this team is poised to make a run at a 500 record. And that might not be the great thing that everyone wants to hear, but it really has to become in baby steps. No one's going to go from winning 3 games to winning 13. That just doesn't happen in the NFL. So, or very rarely anyway. I think this team, the expectations you're right on this team are going to be for them to start winning games. And I do think that it's realistic for them to challenge a 500 record next year. Now that means, you know, heading into December, maybe they're standing at 6 wins. So I think if you're a Jags fan after the last 3 years where they've won only 9 games combined, I think you would take that without a doubt.
ESPN Jaguar reporter Mike DiRocco here with us on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mike, what becomes of Mercedes Lewis here? A big cap figure. Some people think they're going to try to dump him during the draft for any kind of draft pick that they can get. Some of that speculation, I think, is centered on the fact that they don't think Mercedes Lewis is going to be happy with his role now that Julius Thomas is in the fold. But I don't think it matters to the Jags whether or not he's happy with his role. Do you think it's more beneficial to them to carry him for a year at the salary and in the final year of his deal, or if they could get, say, a sixth-round draft pick, move him for whatever they can get?
It just kind of depends, to be honest with you. If it's me, I look at the guys that I have, and I go, well, of all the guys not named Julius Thomas, he's probably the one that I feel the most comfortable with as a blocker. And if you're going to keep Mercedes Lewis, it's going to be as a blocker. You're not going to keep him to be a guy who catches 40, 50 balls next year. And, you know, there's no reason for them to dump him if they don't want to. I mean, his cap hit is pretty high, but they've got the most, I think they still have like $32.5 million in cap space available. So it's not like keeping him would really be a problem. It's the last year of his deal. That's the thing that you're going to run into when you're trading Mercedes Lewis is you're dumping a guy that's going to make, what is it, like $8.5 million against the cap, I think it is, and he's in the last year of his deal. He's certainly not the player he once was. What can you get from him? Well, you can probably get a sixth at maybe at best for Mercedes Lewis, and what team is going to be willing to part with a sixth for a guy like that who really doesn't help you in the passing game? In this day and age, you want tight ends that can run down the field and make plays and make catches, and I don't think that that's Mercedes game at this point. He can still make some plays here and there, but I do think his bigger value is as a blocker. So it wouldn't surprise me if they trade him. I think they're shopping him, and I'm thinking they're looking for something. If they get anything that they feel like is decent enough of an offer, that they'll let him go. But I don't think it kills them if they have to keep him. And Mercedes has been, you know, a really good guy in the locker room too. So I don't necessarily know if. And maybe if he's even unhappy with his role, I don't necessarily know if he'll be a locker room problem guy based on, you know, just dealing with him for the past 2 years and then talking with the guys who have known him for his entire time in Jacksonville.
We mentioned Greg Jennings coming in for a visit yesterday with this franchise. why would it be a good idea for the Jags to bring in Greg Jennings?
Well, I mean, just aside from the fact that he's caught, you know, 550 passes for, you know, 8,000 yards and a bunch of touchdowns, he can still, you know, he's still a productive player. He's not going to catch 70 balls, 75 balls in this offense anymore, but he's a productive player who can be, he would be exactly what they were hoping they were going to get from Cecil Shorts last year and didn't. A guy that, on the field anyway, Cecil was great in the locker room, hard worker, all that other stuff, but a guy that they know that if the young guys are struggling, this is the guy we know we can 100% count on. And it would be reasonable money because he's not going to demand a lot of money. I think it would be a good deal for them to sign him. But if they don't, it's not necessarily a huge loss. I know people talk about the slot position. Well, let's be honest. Julius Thomas is essentially, could essentially be the veteran slot receiver that they need. I mean, he's a guy that's not going to line up on a long line scrimmage. He's going to line up out wide. They're going to use him in the slot here and there as well. They can move him around. So, you know, maybe they don't get the traditional slot receiver, but the offense will be just fine because you can use Julius Thomas in the slot if needed. But anytime you can add a veteran, a quality veteran like that to a group of young receivers, because let's remember, Ace Sanders is not that old. Tandon Doss is very inexperienced as well. So it's not like they have veteran guys on this team that are in their fourth, fifth year. They really don't. So it would be great to get a guy like him in the meeting room, in the locker room, but I don't think it's a huge loss if they don't get him.
Yeah, if Tandon Doss is healthy, I think Ace Sanders has an uphill climb to make the roster this year.
I agree, I mean, he's going to be the guy that would probably win the punt return job, and then if you're Ace Sanders and you can't return punts on this roster, there's not much left for you to do.
Now, Mike, we were looking at your article that you participated in at ESPN.com. Roster needs for the Jags were done by Football Outsiders. Prospect targets at those needs were done by Scouts, Inc., and you made some predictions on what you think the Jags may or may not do. But let me ask you, even though you're not the Football Outsiders guy, what do you think are the biggest needs right now as you look at this roster and say, boy, these are the most troubling areas if we had to line up and play football today?
I still think offensive line, better play along the offensive line is the main need. And I don't necessarily know that equates to, you know, taking an offensive lineman in the first round. But just looking at this team going into the season, that's the one area that I have the most concern, taking quarterback out of the equation, because obviously that's a different story. And then I would say edge rusher. And then after that, I would probably say free safety. You know, I thought that a lot of people, and myself included in this, didn't really devote enough time and attention to how, I guess, depleted the linebacker group was heading into the offseason. And it really was. I mean, you're looking at Calvin Smith and you're looking at Szczesny, and that's it. But Scoot adding Scoot helps, and I expect them to address that in the draft. But I think free safety, edge rusher, and then I still think the offensive line is the number one priority, because it doesn't matter you know, how much healthier Toby Gerhardt is, or regardless of which running back they draft, if that offensive line doesn't play better, it's going to be hard for them to really do anything offensively again this year.
It's a concern, I agree, but is it something, do you see them, look, they're locked in on Jokel, right? The organization is, right? They're
for
locked
better
in on
or worse,
Purnell,
yeah.
Right, for better or worse, right? So the however he has performed, they feel that his best is yet to come. Linder played very well last year. So do you think they'll bring in a guy? Will they draft a guy in the mid-rounds, third, fourth round, to either presumably take the center spot or compete for the center spot, or is Beatles in play here as well, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think Beatles played very well at all last year. I'm not the only one who felt that. I thought he played better over the last six games, but still, for the money they paid him and what they were expecting out of him, he was a huge disappointment. I always run into people who think, well, they've got this guy and they've got this guy. Well, they do, but you can always find somebody better. And this should be a pretty deep group of offensive linemen. If it's me, I don't grab somebody in the first round or the second round, but I do try and bring in a couple of guys in maybe a third or fourth round pick just to add some competition there. You know, because you feel good about what you have in the defensive line. You feel good about what you have at wide receiver. You're adding a back. You're going to add that edge rusher. Feel like you've addressed most of your other needs in the secondary. You know, I just think that offensive line has to be significantly better, because if it's better, then Blake Bortles theoretically will be better. And I just think that that group needs to improve so much that any help that they can give there would be. I thought that they were going to add an interior lineman early in free agency as well, and they didn't. And that means they didn't really target any either, which was a bit of a surprise to me because I know they're committed to Jokel. They are 100% committed to Jokel. But have we seen, I know he was hurt his rookie year and he didn't get a whole lot of experience, but I don't think we've seen any flashes out of him to sit there and say, wow, he's really going to be a very good left tackle. And I would have expected to see some of that last year. Maybe not consistently, but I would have expected to see some flashes here and there, and I didn't see it. Now, did I watch every snap? No. And I'm probably not qualified to rate offensive linemen, you know, like a guy like a Bocelli, who's certainly seen it a ton, or Logman, who's played against those guys. But just from what I saw, I didn't see anything that made me go, yeah, Luke Jokel's the answer at left tackle. Now, he was the second pick in the 2013 draft, so you're going to give that guy a lot more time, but yeah, I would have expected them to address it a little bit more in free agency, and I think that they will address it a little bit more in the draft.
D-Rock, one of the predictions you have in the article up on ESPN.com right now is that taking a wide receiver at 3, not out of the question for this Jaguars team, and maybe in the first round in general. It's not out of the question for this team to be doing something like that in the first round. So I think that there is this perception, especially going into the offseason for this Jaguars team, the defense is old, the offense is young. And do they really want to add more youth to the offensive side of the ball? And I think it goes into the conversation we've been having right now about the growth they expect from Luke Jokel and Luke Bowenko and Brandon Linder and Allen Robinson. There are a lot of first and second year guys that they are counting on to take big steps forward. Is that the right way to build a roster?
It's the only way they have at this point because, I mean, that's what they've committed to. I mean, you have to trust your scouting. You have to trust your coaching ability. You have to trust the fact that these guys are going to get better. So they really don't have any choice, to be honest with you, because they didn't really pursue a lot of veterans on offense. They didn't go after – I mean, they went after Randall Cobb. That would have been a huge get for them, and that would have solved most of the issues that we're talking about right now. But the only way that they'll consider Cooper or White at 3 is if they are 100% convinced that those guys are going to be true number one wide receivers. Like, there's Bryant Lee Jones, A.J. Green. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else in that mix, too, obviously. But if they're convinced that those guys are going to be one of those guys, then they'd be ridiculously foolish not to take that guy at number 3 because there are so few guys like that in the NFL, very few game changers, at wide receiver. I think people confuse, you know, being the team's top wide receiver with being a number one, true number one wide receiver. True number one wide receivers are very rare in the league. There's only a handful of them. So if they think one of those guys can be that, then they darn well should take them because that changes your offense, changes your team, regardless of how young it is, for years to come. You know, Calvin Johnson made instant impact as a rookie. So did Dez Bryant, so did all those other guys that I mentioned, A.J. Green, Julio Jones. I mean, those guys can make a huge impact as a rookie if they're a true number one wide receiver. So if they feel those guys are, go ahead and take them. Because if not, if you don't feel they are, then certainly by any chance, by any stretch, don't grab them early because you can find some other receivers in this group. It should be a deep class of wide receivers.
Your final thought on your first prediction. You talk about the Jags likely taking a pass rusher. The final part of that sentence, after listing some of the top candidates, you say it appears the Jaguars are leaning towards Fowler. I think we've certainly talked ourselves into that being the consensus, Mike, but do we really know if that's the way they're leaning? Because, I mean, clearly last year they did a terrific job in masking their love of Blake Bortles, and I would see no reason why Dave Caldwell would give one indication one way or the other who he's leaning towards at this point in time.
Yeah, you're probably right, but I'll say this. I don't expect a surprise pick at number 3. Like, we've talked about the pass rushers. Which pass rusher they choose, they're probably, you know, I would say 75% that they're leaning towards pass rusher. That's the feeling I get. You know, and then maybe wide receiver else, but what other position could they go at 3 and surprise us with? Well, it won't be tackle. You know, it's not going to be a running back at 3. I wouldn't think. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they are was definitely in love with Todd Gurley, and they're going to take him at three and surprise everybody like they did last year. But I think
that would shock the world right there.
I think it would. I think it absolutely would. But I think if you look at the way that Dave Caldwell's talked about building a franchise and how you need to build a franchise, you need to go ahead and you need to get your quarterback, you need to get your left tackle, and you need to make sure that you've got some corners. As well, I think in this day and age, you need a really good corner, and they feel like they've got a couple of corners. And you also need your edge rusher, your pass rusher, because that's the one thing. The defense, I think, is pretty serviceable at worst. I think it was a solid unit for the most part last year. But the one thing that can transform that defense is the one guy that other teams have to game plan around. You know, whether it's a J.J. Watt or Justin Houston. And when you're defending, you're lining up and you're putting your offensive game plan together against the Jaguars, you don't have to worry about double teaming Chris Clemens. You don't have to worry about chipping him. You don't have to worry about keeping a back end to handle him as well. You can take those guys one on one. You know, it's not a bad deal to go against the Jaguars pass rushers one on one at this point. But if you mix in the huge outside edge rusher that creates havoc, that needs, that has to draw a double team or has to draw attention from the offense, that makes your defense even better. So, I think it's, like I said, 75% chance of leaning towards pass rusher. But, you know, who is it going to be? It could be Vic Beasley. Vic Beasley is certainly more productive than Dante Fowler was in college. Shane Ray is a guy that you can make an argument for as well. I do think that if Leonard Williams is there, they'll have a hard time not picking Leonard Williams because that's probably the best defensive player in the draft. But I would be a little bit surprised if they didn't take a pass rusher at three.
Mike DiRocco, NFL Nation Jaguar reporter for ESPN. By the way, Tony, I agree that the likelihood is Fowler's the guy if we had to go to Vegas and put down the money today. But I, in the back of my mind, I'm just wondering, you know, are we convincing ourselves of this? Because it's not like Dave Caldwell's commenting on any of this stuff, you know, and in the back of my mind, I just wonder, you know, what's really in play. And we don't know, you know, it's probably a little early for teams to start talking about potential trade-ups, too. But the week leading up to the draft is when those conversations will start to take place. So it'll be fun, as it always is. Mike, great work. We appreciate the time, and we'll see you when you get back around over here at Everbank.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it, man. Mike DiRocco here with us, and of course, ESPN DiRocco is where you can check him out on Twitter as well. One guy, we haven't even mentioned this today, just an offhand comment, but we'll get to one guy who said the Jags have shown a lot of interest in him, and it's a name that we've talked about in this draft process, not among these pass rushers. We'll do that next, as well as look at the fan feedback spotlight, where we asked you today to tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and use that hashtag Jaguars today. Tell us who your favorite draft analyst is, your single favorite draft analyst, although that's probably redundant. Single favorite, right? I would think that would be redundant. He's either
it's
your favorite.
A little redundant.
A little redundant, right? Yeah. He's either your favorite. It's like most definitely. It definitely is an absolute. Your favorite seems like it's an absolute, so probably unnecessary that I even spent 20 seconds on talking about how unnecessary it was. We'll do all that, though, coming up, if that makes sense. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Percy Sledge, rest in peace. When a man loves a woman. I don't know what else he's known for, I'm sure. Fortunato, what else you got for Percy Sledge over there?
I don't have too much, but Billboard did say, actually it was Rolling Stone said this was in their top 300 songs at 54.
It was a great song, Fortunato. I'm looking at Joe Fortunato, who actually knows something about music. My man Tyler. Yeah, the bus is coming, Tyler. I'm about to throw you under. He goes, yeah, I'm coming back with Perry Sledge's When a Man Loves a Woman, because he just passed away. All right. Thump, thump. There go the wheels over Tyler. That's Percy.
Hit man, he can sing.
Ah, there's no question. When music was music, Tony. That's what the old timers said. Stuff like that. It's all good. Here we go. Tony, which NFL draft prospect that has been talked about, you know, not super frequently, but it, certainly no surprise that the Jags were to draft him, say, in round two, said that the Jags have shown a lot of interest in him. That would be Boise State running back Jay Ajayi.
They certainly have.
Yeah, he went on Pro Football Talk Live and was asked which teams have shown the most interest. He said the Cowboys, Ravens, Chargers, and Jaguars. Now, you know, there's no talent. Do those teams, other teams look at him as a first round pick? Certainly the Jags wouldn't take him in the first round, but do they look at him as a first round pick or as a second round pick?
Right.
And I've seen him mocked in the first round. So it's certainly possible, but you know, just keep an eye on that name. If he is on the board at 36, certainly could end up being a Jacksonville Jaguar. All right, looking at the fan feedback spotlight today, brought to you by the Tomblish family of dealerships. Tony, we asked you, what did we ask you? Who's your favorite draft analyst? That's what we asked you. Slipped my mind there for a second. What did we get?
Apparently. Here's what we got from Bobby. Charles Davis, for me, simply put, the guy is awesome. Hashtag path to the draft. From Doug, my most single favorite is most definitely absolutely McShay. Hashtag redundant. From Eric, we got Tony Pauline. Always has insightful information to me. I enjoy his work. From Cam Mayock, misses on a lot, but I respect him because he actually played in the league. From Chad, favorite draft guy, Mike Mayock. Love his perspective on players' knowledge and his presentation. From Chris, Daniel Jeremiah, hands down. From Mike, Duval Doom. From Stevie.
Way to go, Doom.
At Irish Jaguar, Daniel Jeremiah or Matt Miller. From John, Mike Mayock with a bullet breaks down the tape slightly better than Logs. LOL.
Yeah, but is that I don't know. Is that
a
shot at
Logs? Are you insulting Jeff Loggeman, sir?
Logs has a tremendous job. Logs is not a draft analyst. He breaks down Jaguar game film.
From Ryan, I'd say Josh Norris and or Daniel Jeremiah at Move the Sticks. From Michael, easy. It's Uncle Chaps, then Dane Brugler, then Mayock, but Hank Jones is quality too, to be honest. From Matt, Todd McShay, he's more thorough in everything than Kuiper. And Mike.
Oh, I don't agree with that.
Hands down, it's Uncle Chaps.
Getting some love. Good for him. You know, look, the thing about Mayock that I don't put him at the top, Mayock will tell you. He only looks at the top 100 prospects.
But
Mayock,
he's really good with it.
That's fine. He can't talk about the fifth round of the draft. He's not. Kuiper is encyclopedic in his knowledge of these guys. He's not my favorite. Tony Pauline's probably my favorite. I just like Tony. I like listening to Tony. But I got a lot of respect for Kuiper. The ability to, in you know, deep into day three of the draft, pull a guy out of, you know, West Arkansas, Lafayette, whatever, you know, and just go, oh yeah, here's what he's good at, here's what he's not good at, and he's got such a depth of knowledge on a wide variety of prospects. I think he's become a bit of a caricature because of the hair and the voice, and now you got Caliendo doing Todd. Somebody did say Caliendo is Kuiper, obviously, weighed in with that, but I think Kuiper doesn't get the proper amount of respect, quite frankly.
Kuiper's really good. Honestly, the amount of information that guys like Kuiper and McShay and Jeremiah, these guys that have to go on, and Charles Davis, who do the full seven rounds of the draft, like you're talking. Mayock, I don't think anybody's better than him. In the first two and a half, three rounds of the draft, I don't think anybody's more interesting to listen to talk about it than Mike Mayock is. But then you get to that point where there is a bunch of guys that he hasn't studied. And it's interesting watching NFL Network at that point because he's reacting to tape that maybe he hasn't even seen on these guys.
Right.
And that's an interesting part of that process. He's like, oh, look at this. And you got a bunch of guys in that room that have watched it before.
What else does Mike Mayock have to do
but
watch tape?
But look.
Watch more.
The amount of information that these guys have to absorb to get ready to go on there and do a 3A broadcast about the NFL draft is crazy. And I think I, like you, love Tony Pauline for that same kind of reason. He is the guy who comes on here, and we can ask him about some sixth-round draft prospect.
He's pulled crazy guys out,
and he'll give you something.
Yeah.
He'll give you something on what that player has done, who likes him, who's talking about him, something. That kind of knowledge is always so impressive to me. But honestly, my favorite guy in the entire process is Daniel Jeremiah.
He's good. He's really good.
Daniel.
Yeah, he's the up-and-comer, I think. I think he goes deeper than Mayock does as well. But the fan feedback spotlight, look, it's your favorite. There's no wrong answer unless we think it's wrong. It's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, including Tom Bush Mazda. Reminder, 2015 Mazda 3, the 2015 Mazda CX-5, and the 2015 Mazda CX-9 all received Edmunds' most popular awards. And 2015 Mazda 3 has been named by Kiplinger as best in class in the under $20,000 category. Just some of the features of the Tom Bush family of dealerships that you've got to look forward to if you visit TomBush.com or check them out on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. Quick text from the Boston Sports Bar restaurant and sports bar text line regarding Justin Blackman. I feel like we've addressed this, but why not one more time? Why, Mike? Why, Fat Tony, have we not heard anything about Justin Blackman? Nothing from his agent, nothing from the Jags, nothing from the NFL. What is the deal with this guy? Thanks, Stanford. There's nothing to say until he applies for reinstatement. And until that happens, what's his agent going to say? He still hasn't applied for reinstatement.
Right.
May not be interested in applying for reinstatement. Don't know. Saw a picture going around social media yesterday. Looked like he hasn't missed too many meals. Now, that pictures can be deceiving. This was just basically you could see his head. You could see his face. But, you know, looked like he was a little puffy. Maybe not in, you know, the best football shape right now. You would expect he wouldn't be in tip-top football shape, but I don't know where his head's at as far as that goes. Maybe he's just happy in life right now and he's, you know, battled his demons and he wants to just chill and relax. I don't know. There's nothing to tell. There's nothing to report. That's why you haven't heard anything. That's the bottom line. And when there's something to hear, you'll hear it. But the Jags have nothing to say on it. It's in his court. The ball's not in their court. They control his rights until and unless he decides to come back to the National Football League and play out his contract, and the NFL is not going to comment on a guy who hasn't applied for reinstatement.
Certainly not.
Yeah. So when he applies for reinstatement, if he applies for reinstatement, that's when you'll hear something about Justin Blackman. And as we've said all along, don't count on Justin Blackman. The Jags aren't.
No.
Right? You know, I still think if he is properly motivated, I don't think he's too old to come back and make a go of it. The question is he motivated to do that?
We don't know.
We'll find out. Thanks to Rob Rang. Great stuff from Rob today, I thought.
Yeah, it was really good.
CBSSports.com. Likewise, Mike DiRocco from ESPN, the Jags, NFL Nation Jaguar reporter for ESPN. What you got over there?
Yeah, I got my show coming up tonight from 8 to 10, following the ladies of Helmets and Heels here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Going to have Mark Long, Gene Williams, and Chris Reimer on to talk about the Orange and Blue game, the Garden and Gold game, and, of course, the Masters this weekend and what it may mean going forward, as well as some thoughts on the opening week and a half of baseball as well.
Do tell all those guys I said hello.
We'll do.
Gene Williams, has been a while since I talked with Gene. Used to be a weekly regular for a number of years, obviously, with our shows here. All right, that just about does it for us. Thanks to Tyler Devitt. Right now, if you see him out in the road, some tire tracks on him. That was my doing. I totally threw him under the bus, but... Guess what, Tyler?
Rest in peace, Perry.
We'll be
Perry,
the last
Percy,
time.
Percy, same thing. Condolences
Perry,
to him. Condolences.
Poor Perry Sledge. For Joe Fortunato, who now has updated his projected schedule for the Jaguars. We told you about Fortunato's schedule contest. And what do we predict yesterday? JP will do it. Don't know if anyone else will do it. So far, you got Joe and JP, and it's nice that they now realize that the final 2 weeks of the season are played against division opponents. So that'll give them a little boost.
We helped.
We did. We helped adjust the early projection on the schedule. You are welcome, Mr. Fortunato. XL Primetime coming up next. We'll say hello to Joe C. Twig and Hacker straight ahead on 1010XL 92.5 FM.